Okay, we're going to turn to God's Word for a bit, and if you can find a Bible, would you turn to 1 Samuel 21? 1 Samuel 21. If anybody gets there first, can you yell out a page number? That'd be good. So I've got a different Bible up here. So if you've got a page number, let us know. And we'll be camping out in 1 Samuel 21 and 1 Samuel 22 today, okay? We're going to be looking at an event in David's life as we continue to study that life together. What was it? 247, page 247 in your seat Bibles. That'd be great. Okay, today we're going to be talking about something that's relevant for all of us. Something that is relevant for all of us. It's about this. I think it's on the screen. Have we got a? There's a PowerPoint coming up. It's an event in David's life. I think it has relevance for all of us. Here's what it's about. It's about this. The simple fact that the ways of God feel very unappealing and very irrelevant to us when we're in three conditions. When we're either angry, or when we're isolated, lonely, or when we're afraid. And we're going to talk about a time in David's life when exactly that happened for him. When he ignored God because he was angry, he was isolated, and he was afraid. Those three conditions, oddly enough, have the potential to derail the most devout disciple on the planet. That's the truth. When we're feeling those things, we're tempted to breach all sorts of boundaries, usually, in our lives. Boundaries that we wouldn't normally cross, either relationally in a relationship, or maybe financially. You know, when you're afraid, you might make all sorts of weird financial decisions, for instance. Maybe professionally, maybe you do something at work that you wouldn't normally do because you're either angry or isolated or you're afraid. And then they're the source of our biggest regrets, aren't they? When we respond out of those things, rather than turning to God, we turn to our own devices. They're often the greatest source of our regret when we're angry or afraid or isolated. And that's because, the simple fact is, because when we're alone, when we're overwhelmed by any of those three things, you feel you have to basically do something, don't you? When you're overwhelmed by those, you always feel, I've got to do something, I've got to fix this, I've got to sort this out, I've got to take some action somewhere. And the problem isn't that you do something, the problem is this, that you often do anything to deal with your anger, anything to do with your loneliness, anything to do with your fear. And often it can be not the right thing. Often it can be something that we then regret and we wish we hadn't done. Whereas if we turned to God, if we'd lent on him in those moments, maybe we wouldn't just do anything, but we would do what he wanted us to do. So we're talking about that today. And David experienced this truth in his life. David had two colossal failures in his life. One happened in his 50s, and he was very famous for it. I'm not going to give you a clue. Any idea what that famous failure was in his 50s? You know. Bathsheba, yeah. And that's the one we think of, isn't it, when we think of David, that he was very human, and he messed up. When he was angry, afraid, or isolated, he messed up. But we don't recognize another one that happened. Actually, it was probably had more consequences for the people around him than the Bathsheba one. It's probably a bigger one in a weird sort of way. And that happened in his 20s. He was about 22 when it happened to him. And we're going to look at that today. Following his defeat of Goliath, here's what happened for David. Suddenly he became a celebrity. Suddenly he became the name in Israel. He became well known. And King Saul began to see David as a threat. We've talked about that, haven't we, when we talked about Jonathan, his son. So Saul decided something. He said, you know what, I'm going to take that age-old strategy, which basically means keep your friends close and keep your enemies closer. And that's what he decided to do. So he decided to marry off David to one of his daughters. And that's how people in those days did it. They made alliances with people they were often afraid of or a threat to them. So that's what Saul did. He tries to marry off David to his daughter, and David refuses. shepherd boy, biggest opportunity of his life, married into a kingship, and he refuses. And guess what? That just made him more popular. The people said, wow, this guy's great. He's not remotely selfish. This guy is a wonderful guy. And it made him more popular, and it made Saul even more insecure because David was attracting more followers. David eventually does fall in love, and he marries. He marries one of Saul's other daughters called Michal, which sounds like a bloke's name, but it isn't. It's a lady's name in those days, Michal. And he marries her, and he becomes close friends also with Saul's son, the next in line to the throne, Saul's son, Jonathan. We talked about that the other week. King Saul is starting to feel pretty insecure. He's now marrying the family. He's now best friends with his son. And all the people love him. Saul, over a period of about 7 years, then schemes and plots and tries to find as many ways as possible to get rid of David, to undermine David. He gives him some impossible tasks with the aim that David will not walk out of it alive. He sends him on military missions. He sends him to try and achieve a dowry, all at great personal risk. And every time David comes back, and every time David is more popular and more successful. So the scheme for 7 years for Saul backfires. It comes to a head in 1 Samuel 20, when Jonathan warns David, Saul's gloves are off. He will kill you at the first opportunity he gets. He's not being subtle anymore. He will kill you. Run. And David runs. David runs. And at age 22, just 22 years old, David finds himself afraid for his life. Something very few of us have ever been afraid of. Alone, completely alone, rejected by the king and the people that he served. So he's probably feeling, I suspect, a little bit angry as well at the way he's been mistreated. Because he hasn't done anything wrong. He's angry, he's abandoned, he's afraid. So he does what most people do if you're angry, abandoned and afraid. Here's what you do. You panic. You panic. He lost sight of the fact that God was with him. God was with him. And like us, when we're angry, isolated and afraid, he did some things that he would later look back on and ask a simple question that maybe you've asked in your life. Maybe you've ever got to a point in your life and you've gone, why did I do that? Why did I behave like that? Why did I make that decision and take that action? Why did I do that? You want to know why? Because you were either angry or isolated or afraid. And instead of leaning on God, you leaned on your own solutions. That's often what happened. Here's what David did. Here's the story of how he reacted. And he didn't just do something, he did anything when he was confronted by those three things: anger, fear, and loneliness. Here's what he did. Here's the story. 1 Samuel 21 in your Bibles. David went to the town of Nob to see Ahimelech the priest. And you've got to realize, in those days, there wasn't a temple in Jerusalem. What was before the temple? Anybody remember? Where was the Ark of the Covenant kept? In a tabernacle, which was basically a huge tent. And this tent moved. So no temple in Jerusalem. And the tent moves around Israel. And at this point, it was in a certain town. And that's where the priests were, the Levites, who were called to look after the Ark and the altar and the sacrificial system that God had set up through Moses. So the tent moves, the church moves around the country, and David goes to find it and to find the high priest. So Ahimelech trembled when he saw David. Why are you alone? He asked. Why is no one with you? Verse 1. Now David normally traveled with hundreds of personal warriors and bodyguards. He was high in the kingdom, he was a military commander and leader, and he turns up on his Todd, which is a bit odd. David lies at this point because he's angry, he's afraid, and he's isolated. So he lies, which David, a man after God's own heart, knows is a no-no according to the big Ten Commandments. But he starts lying. Here's what he said. The king has sent me on a private matter, David said. He told me not to tell anyone why I'm here. I have told my men where to meet me later. So David's afraid. He lies. But that lie there had fatal consequences for the whole of Ahimelech's family a bit later on. Here's what happens. Now, what is there to eat? David says, give me 5 loaves of bread or anything else you have. And Ahimelech answers, we don't have any regular bread, the priest replied, but there is the holy bread. Now, bread was offered every day on the altar. Fresh bread was placed on the altar before God, and then it was eaten by the priests, because God didn't really need to eat it, but the priest did. So the priest would eat the bread, but it was only to be eaten by the priest. And that's what he's talking about. And since there was no other food available, the priest gave him the holy bread, the bread of the presence, it was called, that was placed before the Lord in the tabernacle. It had just been replaced that day with fresh bread. So David lies. What happened? I'm wondering, what happened to the David who stood in front of Goliath at this moment? Remember that kid? He was 15 then. He was 15 years old, and he stood in front of the Philistine champion, and he said in front of the Philistine champion, this day I won't defeat you, but God will defeat you. And not only that, God will feed on the carcasses of the enemies of the Israelites, that we will wipe you out. The Lord will fight for me, he said. Do you remember that story? An amazing story. And he always gave credit to God over it. And he faced Goliath knowing God was beside him. What happened to that David at this moment? Where is that David? And then things get really weird for Ahimelech. Because he's not really buying it. He's concerned about this story. David asked Ahimelech, do you have a spear or a sword? So he's turned up. He's on his own. He's got no food. For a military commander, that's a bit odd, because armies march on their stomach, don't they? So he's got no food, no resources, and he's got no weapons either. So he says, do you have a spear or a sword? The king's business was so urgent, I didn't even have time to grab a weapon. All very dodgy. You're a famous warrior and commander. You show up alone and unarmed and unsupplied. And at this moment, I think this is good. I think this is what happens when we're afraid or alone, when we're isolated. This is what happens. At this moment, God tries to hit the wake-up call for David. Tries to remind him who he is. Tries to remind him, I'm here with you, David. Don't do this stuff. Don't go around lying and trying to fix it yourself. Don't do it. Here's the wake-up call. This is quite significant. Here's what happens. So Ahimelech replies, I only have the sword of, guess who? Goliath. That 15-year-old kid who slayed Goliath. I only have that sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you killed. You killed in the valley of Elah. The priest replied, it's wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. Take it if you want it, for there's nothing else here. And God is yelling at this point to David, remember who you are. Remember how I stood by your side. Don't panic. Don't give in to your own crazy ideas of how to fix this situation. And David dedicated, we believe, that sword. He gave it to the temple. You know why he gave it to the temple? Literally as a statement. I didn't kill Goliath. God did. My God was with me. My God helped me face this giant. My God was there. That's why he did it. And this is the reminder. This is the wake-up call for David. What happened to that 15-year-old who ran towards danger rather than away from it? Because he was assured that God was with him. What happened to the one who wrote, I will, you remember that famous psalm? I will fear no evil. Why? For thou art with me. What happened to that guy? Answer, that's what happened to that guy. Fear, anger, and loneliness. And we know that. We know these three giants have the potential to make us all forget all the giants we've ever slayed with God in the past, where we've said, God was there, God helped me, God did that. And we forget all those in the moment because of fear and anger and loneliness. He lies, he runs, he even ignores God's billboard and God's sign writing in the sky saying, I'm still here, because of these three things. And we do it too. We do it too. Because this is where David's story crosses mine and crosses yours, isn't it? Those times when we need God the most. Isn't that interesting? When you need God the most, ironically, are also the times you are most likely not to lean on him. When we need God the most, we are tempted to run away from him rather than run towards him. That's often the way, isn't it? Because we feel we need to do something, do anything to fix this. And when we see friends doing this, it's obvious, isn't it? Making decisions based on their anger or their loneliness or their fear. You ever had a friend who's done that? And you thought, don't do that. And it's really obvious when it's a friend, isn't it? What's bizarre is that we're completely oblivious when it's us. So often, in the midst of those three things, we can't see what we're doing ourselves. Here's the dynamic that David was experiencing, what I've experienced in life, and probably what you have. It's easy to trust God when you have nothing to lose, isn't it? There's nothing to lose, it's easy to trust God. When you don't have anything to lose. Age 15, he didn't have anything to lose, did he? At age 15, he didn't own anything. He didn't have any status. He was a shepherd, and he was the least in his family. He had nothing to lose. He didn't have anything. So he trusted God. He trusted God. But it's much harder to trust him when we have a lot to lose, isn't it? When I have that position, or that reputation, or that income, or that security, whatever it is, that relationship. And now I'm going to have to trust him, and I'm going to have to trust him with all this stuff that I've accumulated over the years. And that's much harder. It's much easier to trust God when you're 15 than it is when you're 30, or when you're 40, or when you're 50. It's incredibly hard to trust him when we've accumulated him, and the things that we've accumulated start to slip away or maybe at risk. It's really hard. And that's why David's next decision is even more baffling. It's really odd, this. He runs to the Philistines with Goliath's sword. That's what happens next if you read the story on. He goes to the city of Gath. And who was from Gath? Any ideas? Who famously came from Gath, whom David slayed? Goliath. How odd is that? So he's got Goliath's sword and he runs to the one place where he's probably going to be the least popular bloke to knock on the door. Hello, it's me, Slade, your warrior, your champion. Could I just come in? Would you take me in and look after me? That's a crazy decision, right? But when you're lonely, isolated and afraid, you sort of do that. You sort of do silly things. So he goes to Gath, and the king of Gath, gets a request from David. David says, can I come and fight for you? And the king of Gath is slightly skeptical about this offer, as you might imagine, having been the guy who was the cause of his entire army's murder and, you know, decimation. And the king says, but you're David, you're carrying Goliath's sword. The answer is, no way. You're not joining us. And David gets really terrified then because he realizes his offer isn't taken up and he's the enemy and now he's in trouble. You know what he does? He pretends to be insane. No joke. King David pretends to be absolutely crazy. He starts dribbling and drooling and muttering and scraping the floor, and he behaves like a crazy man in order to protect himself. That's what he does. Eventually, the king of Gath says, I've got enough fools in my court. I don't need another one. Get rid of him. And they kick David out. David runs for his life. Now he has nowhere to go. Even his enemies and his former allies, nowhere to go. And he ends up in a cave. He ends up living in a cave like some crazy hermit. And it's while he's there that he finally comes to his senses and he returns to Israel and seeks out a prophet. Now, David finally seeks God's counsel at this moment. Here's the problem. Here's the problem when you're afraid and when you're isolated and when you're angry. Here's the problem. The damage is already done. Often that's what happens. We make a ton of choices, and then we come to our senses, but the choices have already been made. And that's what happens for David. When David sought food and help for Ahimelech from the high priest, he was seen. He was seen by a man called Doeg. He was the King Saul's chief herdsman. And Doeg seems some opportunity to get in with the king here. He has some information. And he tells Saul about what he's seen in that meeting between David and the high priest. Here's what he says. I saw the son of Jesse talking to the priest. Ahimelech consulted the Lord for him. Then he gave him food and the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Saul is furious. He's already paranoid. Now he thinks the high priest is conspiring with David, which he isn't. And if David had been honest, maybe it wouldn't have got to this. But now Ahimelech is in Saul's sights. He thinks he's a traitor and a conspirator. Ahimelech doesn't know what's going on. But Saul sends for Ahimelech and the whole family. And Ahimelech tells Saul what he knows. He said, I often consult for David. David often comes because he's a man of God and he talks to the high priest, that's me, and he often asks God's guidance and advice. That's what I do. That's normal. I don't know anything about a plot. What plot? But Saul won't see reason, as Saul hasn't seen reason for years. And this is what Saul says. You will surely die, Ahimelech. Not only you, along with your entire family. And he ordered his bodyguards, kill these priests of the Lord. They are allies and conspirators with David. And it turns out, if you read the story, that the guards, the troops around Saul wouldn't do it. Because you don't cut down the priest of God, the high priest of God in your country without consequences. But Saul is irrational. He doesn't understand. He's just lost it. So Doeg does it for him because Doeg thinks there's some political advantage in this. And he murders Ahimelech, cuts him down there and then. And then, on Saul's command, he goes back to the town in which the tabernacle is and they kill all of the priests. They're all slaughtered. 85 priests are slaughtered that day where they stand. And their families, men, women, and children. Only one person gets out of that town alive, and that's Abiathar, one of Ahimelech's sons. And he escapes and he tells David what happened, and David is just broken by this. I mean, we look at the Bathsheba incident, don't we? Actually, this one, it almost feels worse. More people lost their lives because of this decision of David than in the Bathsheba situation. And David wakes up. David realizes what's happened. This is what he says. Now I have caused, to this remaining son he says, I have caused the death of your father's family. I have done that. Story isn't about David. It sort of resonates with us, doesn't it? There are times when our anger can push us to do things that we wouldn't normally contemplate. You ever done or said anything when you were just really angry about something? And then about 48 hours later, you think, oh, heck, that was a bad idea. And there's all sorts of fallout from it. Or times when loneliness makes you do things that you wouldn't normally do, that your friends would say, be patient, wait, it's okay, don't make that call right now. Anger, loneliness, and fear can make otherwise unthinkable things for us thinkable. Because we've got to do something. And often we do anything to stop feeling those things. Here's the question. This is where it hits with us. Here's the question. What is your loneliness, anger, or fear causing you to consider that you've never considered before? What about you? Are any of those at play in your life at the moment? And what are you considering that you never considered before? Relationally, maybe financially, maybe professionally. What risks are you now considering? What old habits that you've given up? But now you're thinking, I might go back to that. I got some comfort from that. Try it another way. Here's another way. Not what, but who. Who is your loneliness, anger, or fear causing you to consider that you've never considered before? Because you're lonely and angry and afraid, you're taking up maybe that offer. Maybe picking up that phone. Maybe having that conversation. You know it's dangerous ground. But you're thinking about it now because you're lonely. You're angry or you're afraid. And here's the wake-up call question for us. Here's the Goliath sword moment for us. And it might be relevant for someone here. Who, besides you, do your considerations put at risk? That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? We already know the answer to that one. If you haven't made a decision out of anger, fear, or loneliness, you will know the answer to that one already. The people you put at risk are always the people who love you most and the people you love the most. They're always the people we put at risk when we act out of fear, anger, or loneliness. Some of you experienced that. Maybe dad's anger spiraled out of control or mum's isolation. Maybe made her drink too much. And been battling that stuff ever since. Who else is at risk of an impulse to give in to anger, abandonment, or fear? And here's another question. Because I think this is always helpful, because we don't see it in our own lives. But maybe when we get a wake-up call from God, we need to ask this. What advice would you give to somebody who is you? What would you say to yourself? What would you say to a friend? And can you say it to you? What advice would you give? Because we're really good at spotting it in other people. Done it there. But we're rubbish at saying it to ourselves. What would you say to somebody who is you? Isn't it obvious when it's someone else so that what if that someone else is you? I wonder what advice grown-up David would give us right now. What advice would David give to us if he saw us acting out of fear or isolation or anger? What advice? We actually know what advice. David wrote down his advice after that experience. It's in Psalm 9, verse 9. This is what David's advice to us is. Whenever you're tempted to act out of anger, isolation, or fear. Here's what he says. The Lord is a shelter for the oppressed. Not alcohol, not an affair, not another relationship, not a load of debt, not a new car or a new house. The Lord is a shelter for the oppressed. He is a refuge in times of trouble, says David. He learnt the hard way. A refuge is a place you run to. When do you go to a refuge? When you're afraid. When you're lonely. When you're angry. You go to a place of refuge. God is a safe place to run to when you're in those conditions. And it says this, doesn't it? Those who know your name trust in you, not in other stuff, not in their own decision making in those conditions, but actually they trust in you. For you, O Lord, do not abandon. You do not abandon those who search for you. So when you're in that situation, don't run away from God, run to God, because he will not abandon you. Remember the God who stood by you previously and run back to him. That is David's advice. That's what he says in Psalm 9. That's what he says. David would say, don't do what I do. It made it worse. It made my life much more complicated. And it hurt those I loved. Don't do what I do. And 1,000 years later, 1,000 years after this, David's most famous descendant gazed into the eyes of some very frightened, very abandoned Israelites. And he said this, come to me. Come to me if you're frightened, if you're alone, if you're all these things. Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry these heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Jesus basically said, I am that refuge. I am that refuge. That's what he says to everybody in this room. I am that refuge when you're angry, when you're isolated, when you're afraid. I am the refuge. Come to me. I am that Lord. He says, don't run. Do pay attention to the wake-up calls. Don't move until you are led by me. Lonely as you are, angry as you are, fearful as you may be, don't move without me. Trust me. For the Lord is a shelter for the oppressed. He is a refuge in times of trouble. Those who know your name trust in you. For you, O Lord, you do not abandon those who search for you. Trust me, says God. Trust me.